Hi, folks. Welcome to another episode of Film Study. This is Ken McCusick, and we're back for part two of the UDFA signings for the Baltimore Ravens that have just occurred over the last couple of days. If you didn't listen to part one, it's worth going back and listening to, because the most interesting player individually of the group is Nash Hutmaker, who I went into some detail on in the first episode. Very interesting nose tackle with a wrestling background from Nebraska, who I think is probably more likely than not to make the team at this point. Talked about some developmental offensive tackles. We're going to actually get into those players in this half or one of the two. Very heavy small school prevalence within this group, which we have not seen a lot from the DaCosta draft picks over the last few years. So we got Carson Vinson was drafted from a small school, but all over these UDFA guys, there's a whole bunch of non-power four, but also non-FBS players that are in this group. So it's very interesting. There's a fascinating local player who it looks like is being prepped for a conversion, potentially to fullback. So we'll see what that is. I cannot understand what the other reason for having him around was, but I'll leave it to you to go back to that first episode and listen for who the next Patrick Ricard might be. We've talked about that. And there's lots of possibilities for elevations for the practice squad. This is a UDFA is very much a needs-based thing. Find the one extra guy beyond the 53 that you think you can keep on your practice squad during the regular season. And there's other guys who get signed and won't make it to the practice squad. They're among those UDFA signings too, but there's a layer of players that they want to have available as next man up. And in some cases, they have players who they're getting a look at in camp and won't even make the practice squad, but particularly at cornerback, as the replacement level degrades as the season goes on. These are guys who might get a call and to join the Ravens practice squad, and potentially even at some point to get playing time, because weird things happen in December in terms of cornerbacks in the NFL. So we'll continue from where we were and move on. So the last player we talked about was, I think it was Nash Hutmaker. So we'll move on and we'll talk about another offensive tackle here that they brought in. That's Jared Christian Lichtenhahn, an offensive tackle from Oregon State. So a guy who's certainly has power four experience, 6'8", 328, 35 and a quarter inch arms. By the way, the Ravens are their own advertisement for arm length throughout this draft. They drafted a bunch of guys with absurd arm length to play offensive tackle, and they did not compromise on that at any point. There's also a nice video I saw today. Garnett West passed it on to me, of somebody talking about, and this is a defensive player, talking about why arm length is a problem for defenders and what they have to do to kind of counteract it. It's very well done, and I would suggest it to people if you could ask Garnett for it. You can also ask me for it if you want to, and I'll forward it. But Garnett deserves the credit for finding it. So Christian Lichtenhahn had 19 bench reps, which is not particularly good, but he is working with extremely long arms to do that. I don't know his age, but he had 4 years at Colorado before he had his last year at Oregon State. Very mediocre athlete. He's essentially a tall, fat guy. I would say he really carries his weight not in a good place for an offensive lineman. He is a purely developmental offensive lineman. I don't think there's anywhere you would have him play except offensive tackle and probably left tackle in the NFL. I question whether his feet are good enough for that, but I guess there have been some big right tackles, but he's not anywhere close to ready for that. Right now, he needs a lot of time in an NFL weight room and with an NFL nutritionist to re-sculpt his body differently than it's put together right now. He needs a lot more upper body mass in his case. And he's still apple-shaped. I wouldn't call him pear-shaped. He's not big, thunderous thighs. So he's a guy who is just, he's tall and he's long, and that's why he's been drafted. He's being drafted for exactly his measurements, and not anything about the way his body is shaped now. Ran a 5.37.40. There's a bunch of him, of tape of him from practice in what appears to be high school. So it might have been something to send around to colleges, where he basically is taking on anyone who wants to in terms of trying to block them. At least, you know, maybe this is a drill where they alternated between people who were playing tackle and doing the blocking. It looks like everyone wanted a shot at this guy. We'll call him GCL. And everyone wanted a shot at GCL, and he's like stonewalling all of them and holding them off for a long time. These are obviously smaller human beings that he's taking to the woodshed. Basically, this may have even been something from early in his Colorado career that they were doing it. But he looks significantly younger in the video I'm seeing of him doing exactly this. He's just not the exact shape you'd want out of an offensive tackle right now. I think even with a lot of coaching, he may never develop the mirror necessary to succeed as a pass blocker. He's just a second developmental option. I would not see this guy projecting to play guard. He doesn't kind of have the size of a Fa'alele to go with that length to really, you know, used properly that could really be very effective. He's a little bit of a bully on the football field. I do like that about him. And he'll finish some blocks. He's just very soft. I mean, you look at his arms and you're thinking, you know, I'm sure he could beat me up, you know, 9 ways from Sunday, but he's just not the kind of physical specimen you'd expect out of an offensive tackle. So another offensive tackle who's somewhere after Vinson in terms of the pecking order. One of the two guys, either him or who's the other guy, whose brother played, Jared Penning. One of those two guys would be another guy I would think they'd keep on the practice squad. So they certainly will keep Vinson on the roster, which means they've got a roster spot that'll be used for the entire season on a player that will never get an activation. That in its own, you know, sense is a lot to give up in terms of roster spots. The Ravens have not done that a lot recently. Really commented a lot during the draft and on the draft review show about how unusual that is. But you have, I guess, 7 game day inactives on a weekly basis if you elevate 2 players. And it's very hard to manage your walking wounded who can't play that week, but they're not hurt enough to go on IR. And also have a spot for somebody like Vinson to still practice with the team. But it's very important developmentally that he not only practice with the team, but he continue lifting throughout the season and whatnot. And they get his body right. I think Warhop, his project with Vinson is so great that it's probably a multi-year project. It may be 2027 before he's on the field. Now, I like that pick, by the way. I really like the Carson Vinson pick because it's a understanding of the opportunity that the Ravens have right now with Ronnie Stanley and Rosengarten, both under contract for 2 or 3 years. Now it's actually 3 years for both of them officially. Now, Stanley has a 2-for-44 with a third year at $16 million. He might decide he didn't want to play that. Of course, the Ravens might also decide they don't want to pay it if he's not playing well in those first 2 years of the contract. During that time, we may or may not find out if Roger Rosengarten can play left tackle. If Ronnie's injured, we probably will find out because there's nobody else but Rosengarten to move over to left tackle as the first choice. It certainly will not be Carson Vinson jumping in to replace him initially. But I think we'd have something that will happen possibly with Daniel Fa'alele moving to right tackle, possibly with Ben Cleveland moving right tackle would be a possibility. And the other possibility, I think there's still a good chance, is that they'll sign Gerald Fant, I think that's correct. Noah Fant is a tight end. I think it's Gerald Fant, the offensive tackle, some guy who's played at a level but not necessarily very well over the last few years, but would be the first choice because he's done it more recently in the NFL level. That's possible. And then they could more likely, whoever they bring into that spot, they'll move to right tackle. And I think Rosengarten, they'll get to see whether or not their investment is really paying off in terms of a guy who could be a future left tackle. So possibility, and we'll see about that. But anyway, that GCL or Jared Christian Lichtenhan from Oregon State is the guy. The next one down the list, Ozzie Hutchinson, the offensive lineman from Albany, 6'5", 307, 34-inch arms, got a big arm length guy on the inside there, a 5'17", 40. I don't know his age. I've got RS. Yeah, redshirt plus 4 years at Albany. So he's at least 23. He played left tackle at Albany. Of course, that doesn't mean anything. A lot of players play left tackle and then they have to convert to guard. One thing nice about his record was that he only had one penalty in the last 2 years. That's 1,377 snaps. Always important for an offensive lineman to be very conscious of penalties, particularly those that can carry the option value where the defense can decline them. So he's at least in good shape from a starting position on that. He did grade well by PFF as a pass blocker, poorly as a run blocker. I've not looked at tape of him otherwise to determine who this guy is yet. May or may not make the Ravens practice squad, but he's a guy who would be another probably third unit, first and third preseason game guy. He'd be in the third unit in the others, but they typically the Ravens will have 15 linemen in camp and have three very distinct units where they have a starting position for each of them, but they may even want to be looking at multiple positions for those guys towards the bottom of the roster. And one thing you'll see is a big focus in my articles in terms of order of entry during those preseason games, because the order of entry by position tells you a lot about the totem pole. We also get a good look at it at camp, who's the first Ravens unit, the second Ravens unit, and then the third Ravens unit. And the second and third Ravens unit, there's a distinction there that is, the guys on the third unit are very unlikely to make the team. And, you know, maybe they're fighting it out for maybe two, possibly three practice squad spots among that group. So they sometimes keep three offensive linemen. That would be perfectly reasonable. And they might this year, since they've got a couple offensive tackles and maybe they have a guard they want to look at. But we'll see where Ozzie Hutchinson is when he's among that three, and even where they're lining him up. Maybe they're trying to make him a center. Maybe they're trying to make him a guard. Maybe keep him a tackle. I'm interested to see. He's got the length to play tackle. Don't know what else he has, and we'll just see that at camp. The next one down the list, Ketron Jackson, the wide receiver from Baylor, 6'2", 205, a 4.52 40. Don't have his age, but he spent 2 years at Arkansas, then 2 years at Baylor. Probably is 22 or 23. He's an X receiver, very much a deep threat, who had 18.0 yards per reception for his career. And despite that, this is really hard to do. 18.0 yards per reception, which of course is not normally the stat I talk about. I talk about yards per target, which was 8.5. Now you think about that. It's very hard to get only 8.5 yards per target if you get 18.0 yards per reception. How do you do that? A 47% catch rate. So he's been a guy who's mainly been used on some deeper balls. He had a very high A dot, which I didn't record for purposes of this here. His catch radius really should be outstanding, but functionally it's been kind of lacking. He has a very poor contested catch rate, which is 10 of 33 career. The other one I was 17 out of 44 was below average. 10 out of 33 is really bad. Now, what's essentially also very bad with that is it was 26% of his targets. And I think 18% is the median percentage of targets that are contested among the top, all the guys with 50 plus targets in the season in 2024. So doesn't have a great 0-60. Track background is as a relay sprinter, so you would figure there would be pretty good acceleration involved in that, but he's definitely has very good long speed and we'll take a look. We'll see if we see more of Miles Boykin or a BMW off the line of scrimmage, because he certainly is a big dude and he probably is going to be pretty good at beating press coverage if he can transition very quickly and accelerate very quickly off the line of scrimmage. That could potentially be good. Definitely another size and shape prospect. He has at least played in the Power Four, 2 years at Arkansas, 2 years at Baylor. So definitely not a small school prospect in any way. Definitely he'd be one of my favorites to probably make the practice squad. We'll see how that ends up working out. I don't see any way he makes the team. Even if the Ravens' depth does not hold up, I would not expect that Ketron Jackson would be a guy that would be the sixth wide receiver or anything. I think he'd move down. I did not actually take a look at what he's done before on special teams. That's important. If a player like Walker were to get hurt, And then Ketron Jackson might be a guy who would replace him, and that would be highly dependent on whether or not he can deliver on special teams to some degree. All right, next one down. Keon Martin, a cornerback out of Louisiana Lafayette. So we're still going to some smaller schools here. This is one of the few slot corner guys that's even going to be in camp. He's 5'9", 166, so tiny, tiny, tiny man. 4'43", 40. I don't know his age, but he spent 2 years at Youngstown State and then 3 years at Louisiana Lafayette. So as context is an issue in terms of what he's accomplished so far to date. He is coming off a head and neck injury in October of last year. And I believe he came back and he actually played after it. So it probably shouldn't be the kind of concern that it is, but maybe for some reason it is. So anyway, I did see that noted in various places. I just don't know what to make of it, but I'll report it here to you guys since I've seen it. Has 5 career interceptions, an 81.0 opposition passer rating, and 6.1 yards per target in 2024, 6.4 career. Those are both outstanding. So, you know, there's some things to like. Context has to be considered. And then I get to the one really awful stat. He has 18 penalties in 1,317 college coverage snaps. So we're talking about a very grabby corner here. Now, there are some corners, by the way, in the NFL who've had 15-plus penalties in years recently. It does happen, as I'll say. They're usually corners that are not thought to be particularly good. And this is, you know, 18 penalties in what would be 2.4 full NFL seasons probably of play. So it's not the worst thing, but it's a very high rate for a draftable corner. And it's an even higher rate for a draftable corner coming from a lower level. So there are concerns, and being grabby, it's bad to be grabby anywhere, but in some ways being grabby in the slot is usually very indicative of you're getting beat at the turn. So whip routes getting run against you, somebody turns, you grab. Maybe the Ravens can coach that out of him, and maybe they can't, but an interesting prospect. The Ravens are very short on slot corner, except for the big three. So this is a guy who, you know, may get a legitimate look. I think if Ardarius Washington were to get hurt, I think he would have a pretty good chance to come in and play some slot corner. And we may see him a significant amount during the preseason. So he'll be a guy I'm looking at in camp. Okay. A sec to take a drink. Okay, next player on the list is Reed Holsky, an offensive tackle from Miami of Ohio. He is extremely slender at 6'6", 298, ran a 5'24", 40, and has 31.75-inch arms. Here's the good news. He benched reps were 31 at that stature. It's outstanding even for his arm length. There's no mitigation of that. I mean, if he could have 28-inch arms, I'd still be very impressed with 31 bench reps. Spent 5 years at Miami of Ohio, so he hasn't played.
If you're looking for a better way to unwind, focus, or even get a good night's sleep, listen up. Let me tell you about Mood, the online cannabis company that's changing the game when it comes to functional gummies. They've crafted a whole line up of federally legal THC blends designed to help with everything from stress to sleep, to mental clarity, and even some spicier needs if you're into that. Now, what makes Mood different? They go beyond just THC. They pair it with herbs and adaptogens to create targeted effects that you won't find in any other dispensary. And every gummy is made with pesticide-free, small farm American cannabis, so you're getting quality that you can trust. I've tried their sleep gummies, and let me tell you about takes about 15 minutes and I'm out cold, no grogginess, no weird side effects, getting some of the best sleep I've gotten in my life when I take one of these gummies. And if you need a mood boost, there are Epic Euphoria gummies, game changers. And right now, Mood is giving listeners 20% off their first order by using the promo code RAVENS at checkout. So head on over to mood.com, find the perfect gummy for whatever life throws your way, and don't forget to use the promo code RAVENS to save 20%.
Get anywhere else. I don't have his age, but he's 23 or 24 at this point. 3,315 college snaps with 9 penalties is an excellent record. He's always been a good run blocker. He's been improving as a pass blocker. If you look at the PFF grades, does not have the length to play offensive tackle. So this is a problem. He's a tweener dude. And honestly, if I'm looking at his level of play, I like the strength. I'm not crazy about the 5.24 40 in terms of what that means about his ability to move downfield, but I think the best spot for him is probably center. He'd have to put on about 30 pounds to play guard. But then his length might be acceptable at center at 31.75. He's still a short arm guy, but he is, the length of his arms, the impact of them will be mitigated the most at center. So I don't know that this, you know, that Reed has a real likely future or a likely chance to make the team, but you know, I'm sure he's coming to camp with the intention to make the Ravens practice squad at the very least. And hopefully he's a player who we see some good things out of there and in the preseason games. All right. Now, one of the guys who there has been a lot of film on these last few weeks is Sone Ntou, the running back from Monmouth. Now, I'm not able to get Monmouth stats easily. Now, I could look at a Monmouth media guide or something like that, but the college football reference doesn't have it. And PFF doesn't have any grading of his games. So you can see them, you know, beating the crap out of Fordham and some other schools. And Sone Ntou is one of the major reasons they do so. He's a 5'11", 220-pound running back, ran a 4.52 40. I have no idea his age. He went for 3 years to Harvard. Then he transferred for his last 2 years to play Monmouth, which I'm trying to think of what parent would be really proud of that college transfer, but it is what it is. I mean, he wanted to play football. Obviously that's the reason. So he, made good use of his time at Monmouth for sure. Has a very good athletic profile across the board. He looks like a massive athlete on the field against the players he's up there against. He's only 5'11". You know, he's not huge from that standpoint, but he's thick and muscular. He's got a big lower body, big thighs, big glutes, and he runs the ball very effective. Monmouth ran an offense where they basically put him in the shotgun whenever the team got inside the 5-yard line, or at least a significant portion of the time. He scored a bunch of touchdowns that way. I think he might have led the nation in touchdowns, and I'm not sure that means FCS or comparing the FCS to the FBS might have been, but they were constantly mentioning on the tape that, you know, that's 22 touchdowns or 23 touchdowns for the leader in college football or whatever. I don't know, you know, to what degree that was at or what level that was for, but he does have lots of goal line snaps from the Wildcat. He's a very patient runner. You see good field vision on him. And by the way, he's one of the guys, there's a lot of tape out there on him. Other guys, there's a few highlight plays. So even if I really had the time to go back and look at every one of these guys with, you know, extensive tape study, it would be difficult to find enough information on some of these guys who come from the smaller schools, because highlights are generally speaking a lot of what you have. So he's a good candidate to be elevated as a running back 3, I would think. Is he going to be taking goal line snaps away from Derrick Henry? I think that who Rob Long might have asked me that this morning on the show, but no, I don't think that's going to be happening. But I think he is a guy who potentially can give you some good short yardage carries, can give you some good. They know it's coming, and they still can't stop it running at the end of football games. And I know Derrick Henry loves to keep running and whatnot, but you got to get Derrick Henry off the field some. And I would think that Sone Ntou is a guy who could help do that. Anyway, I think he's one of the guys who is, again, not likely probably to make the team, but is one of the most interesting UDFA prospects they have and will probably be a guy that's lying in wait. I don't think it's obvious that Rasheen Ali will make the team. And assuming he doesn't, and they might try and put both on the practice squad. There might be actually somebody who gives Rasheen Ali a phone call and he's gone from the organization. But I think it's quite possible at some point Ntou is going to be the guy who would be the top guy to be activated. I 4.52 40 and built like he is, which is basically like a huge safety. He's certainly a guy who can give you a lot of effort on special teams. I hope he's going to really put his heart into that, because that's going to be what will win him a few activations and hopefully a few carries in the games where he's activated that might extend his tenure with the team. All right, move on to the next player. That's Chandler Martin, the inside linebacker from Memphis. He played 6'0", 230, 3 years at East Tennessee and 2 years at Memphis. So he's be 23 or 24. He's a guy who is the right size. He has solid coverage metrics with 7.3 yards per target. He's got some regular pass rush contributions during his college career that you look at. He does miss a lot of tackles for an inside linebacker, and his stops to miss tackle ratio is kind of pedestrian at 3.2 to 1. I'd like that to be about 4, but you're not going to get a player with no warts at this point in the process. If he's a UDFA, there's a reason he didn't get drafted. And that would probably be the biggest reason for Martin, is that he hasn't been that great a tackler. He's a very patient green dog blitzer. And this shows up even in the little bit of film I've watched of him, is they have a lot of his pass rushes and a lot of his big plays. And a common thread running through it is that he likes to play off ball, not mugging the A-gap. And he's extremely patient, knowing when his responsibility makes a block, he fires downhill, finds a gap appropriately, gets after the quarterback quickly. And he also he goes downhill very quickly from off ball, likes to get a running start to shoot a gap. Now, some of that is probably not the characteristic exactly that you want during the run. You want those gaps to be stuffed and gap assignments to be very clear and force the running back into some more difficult decisions earlier. I think if I had to guess, because he's a shorter arm guy at 31 and a half, and he probably has some trouble with block shedding, that he would be a guy who is trying to get a running start to beat the offensive lineman climbing to level 2, or the fullback for that matter, with a finesse move as opposed to a powerful shedding move. So has a missed tackle rate of 16.9% career, 1.8 to 1 career stops to miss tackle. So as pedestrian as his rate was in 2024, at least it was an improvement. 6.6 yards per target allowed, 108.5 opposition passer rating. There's nothing in there that I can say that's a reason for him to get a spot on either the team or even the practice squad. But I think that I liked what I saw as a pass rusher, and I really like his patience in doing so. I think he'd be a guy that potentially could help the team if they got into real big injury trouble. And I don't see any reason why with a 4.6 40, and a reasonable athleticism and, the size you like from your larger special teams players, that he wouldn't be a guy who wouldn't be, somewhere in the line on punt snaps. He wouldn't be somebody you wouldn't want to have on special teams in general. So I think he stands a really good chance to be there. That's Chandler Martin, the inside linebacker from Memphis. I'm sorry, I've ascribed the wrong 40 time to him. That's the next guy, who is Desmond Igbinosen of Rutgers, who is a slot safety slash strong corner, slot corner. 6'2", 223, that's enormous. 460, 40, 31 and a half inch arms, which is good for a safety, and 20 bench reps. Very plus athletic profile across the board. 223 career special team snaps split across 5 units. So there's a guy certainly that's going to have that as a focus as he enters camp, and want to make sure that the coaches recognize him. Then I gave you the yards per target for him, for Chandler Martin, but it's 6.6 yards per target and 108.5 opposition passer rating. I'm immediately thinking, I forget if that's 24 career, that's not a guy I want on the back end. So we'll see how that works out, but I'm not guessing that he's a split field guy. There's no evidence anyway from what I'm seeing here that he'd be an obvious split field guy. He did have strong safety slash slot corner as his primary responsibilities. Not very much free safety in terms of the specific positions given by game. Anyway, another guy who could be a practice squad player, could get called up at some point as an extra special teams player. Last player we're going to talk about today is Jason Jones, the nose tackle from Auburn, 6'6", 3 1/4. Arms again, almost 34 inches, 33 and 7/8, 5'36", 40. Don't know his age, but he played a year at Oregon, 3 more at Auburn. He might be 23. He might be even 22, potentially. I don't know about a redshirt season. I did not find any evidence of a JUCO time, so I think that's what he's got there. His other testing is all unimpressive. It included an 8.04 three cone. literally corners like a shopping cart are the words I usually use when I see a three cone like that. It's very close to what Orlando Brown posted in the three cone. And you remember how disastrous Orlando Brown's combine was. So anyway, he looks enormous, even the SEC. He's gigantic relative to his line mates and oftentimes relative to linemen across the line of scrimmage. And he's the biggest guy on either side of the line of scrimmage a lot of the time. He's really a two-gap presence. So we look at the two nose tackles, and there's a good compare and contrast project here. But Hutmaker, yeah, is a penetrator. So he'll play a zero, or a one, but he's going to be trying to get in the backfield, create havoc. Whereas Jason Jones is more of a two-gap player. He's trying to stand up. He's trying to set his feet so he can accept a double team a lot of the time. Most of his job is going to be a denial of space and not penetration. I don't think he'll be as effective as what we saw from Michael Pierce, at least not initially, as a bull rusher. Michael Pierce, towards the end of his career, was really an outstanding bull rusher. It was morphing the pocket to an extreme degree. I don't see that happening with Jason Jones, but you know, the thing to like about him is the combination of size and length. So if he's able to magnify that advantage by something that Chuck Smith can teach him, then he may be an effective NFL nose tackle and might be a guy who could, you know, be in the league for a while. I think this will be the most interesting battle for a roster spot in camp. There's other, you know, battles for playing time and whatnot that will be fascinating in terms of the rookies in particular. But Longerbeam and Kone would be another one in terms of a battle for a roster spot. But I think that Jones and Hutmaker is the main event for this preseason. It'll be like, for those who remember, Kelly Gregg versus Dwayne Missouri way back when. What else? Jason Jones, a run defense specialist. He's played just 46% of his snaps as a pass defender career. That's a very, very low percentage. So I looked at that for edges and defensive linemen. I don't remember seeing anybody who had as low a percentage of pass defense snaps as Jason Jones did. And that's going to be a function of him being taken out of the game entirely on any drives where the team has to pass every down, or any time when the team has to pass every down to catch up. So end of half, he'd be out of there. You know, starting midway through the third quarter when the Ravens have a 17-point lead, he won't see another snap. You know, it's that kind of thing. And I think that Jason Jones is a guy who helps you get ahead early in the game and helps you on rundowns. But it also it's a fairly limited role that he has. I think Hutmaker can actually give you more as a pass rusher. That I think will be a real positive to look for from him. So anyway, Hutmaker and Jones, those are the two to watch at nose tackle. And that'll do it. There are some other guys. They signed a kicker. They signed Thomas Perry from Middlebury College in Vermont. You talk about small schools. Middlebury College is known for their students skiing down the mountain, I believe, on graduation day. So it's in Vermont, and it was in the story was in the Wall Street Journal once. I wouldn't otherwise know about it, but it was said that the Middlebury College graduates will go down a ski run together as part of the graduation process. If I have that wrong, somebody will correct me. I'm sure that's what Twitter is for, right? The Ravens probably most interestingly also brought in a kicker for a mini camp tryout. Now, you know, they have the rookie mini camp, and then they have a mini camp, and they basically are bringing some players in who they haven't signed to the 90-man roster yet, but they might. And those guys are effectively just getting a tryout. They don't even have a guaranteed camp invite yet. And even when you do get a camp invite, you could be cut at any time. You could be waived. So I don't know how you really look at those kind of guarantees, but most of their UDFA group, they know they're going to be there for most of camp until they have to make cuts. The fact that the Ravens brought an extra kicker in, I thought was interesting because it certainly signals the notion that Tucker is gone. He's we haven't heard much of a positive nature from the Ravens, but more than that, if they have two guys coming in that they're looking at that's really strange. If they've had one guy a lot of times come in to as camp competition for Tucker, and you know, over the years, and you know, going back to the Stover era, you know, Hauschka and Graham Gano and Lutz, there's others too, but at least those three, Cameron Dicker, they all came in and they got some kicks for the Ravens, and then they went on to be pretty damn good kickers other places, which tells you that Randy Brown is really doing his job in terms of finding kicking talent. And I think this has probably happened again in what's happening here. And it would just be my impression, not having any inside information, that the Tucker situation will resolve itself on or about June 1st, and the Ravens will move forward with the players they have. I don't know. There are many camps, I believe, before June 1st, and I don't know if we'll even see Justin Tucker there. So we'll see how that plays out. But we'll probably get more signals as we get a little closer to June 1st on exactly what's happening. And the Ravens obviously taking their time making this decision and also waiting on the NFL to decide what the outcome of their investigation is. I have not heard anything about the NFL doing that. And it usually takes quite a bit of time for them to investigate allegations. So we'll see how that plays out. Anyway, thanks for listening. That's my rundown on the UDFAs. Not a whole lot of tape effort clearly went into that. I know that's a level below what you're used to from me, but this is a case where it's a lot of additional players and a lot of small school players where actually finding that film is quite difficult. So I could look at highlights and pretend like I could expand that into 10 thoughts about the guy. I'm not a fraud like that. I won't play that game with you. So I'll tell you some common threads I saw in highlights when I did. I'm otherwise going to go mostly characteristic wise. And in some cases where I know the story, like in Hutmaker and Jason Jones, where there's more that you can look at, I'll tell you what I know. Anyway, thanks very much for listening. Other folks out there, we're getting into short season. And I had some great ideas come across by Twitter DM today of new short ideas to do. We're going to take a look at other teams' drafts and hopefully have a guest from each of the other AFC North teams. So we have a show and talk about their offseason and how they think their draft went. See who they like as the gems towards their bottom of the draft. See if they like their top picks. And we'll look at that. But I want to hear from you. If you have a topic you're passionate about, hit me up. DMs are always open on Twitter. And I want to have that topic that we can do in about 20 minutes that'll keep people interested and hopefully provide some shorter content than what I've just done here today in terms of film study content that people can listen to. Thanks again, and we'll talk to you next time on Film Study.